You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Now, the UW Board of Regents voted last week to approve a funding deal from Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. One sticking point in that deal was Republican objections to funding for diversity, equity, and inclusion at the UW system. Those DEI programs faced changes and cuts under the deal. Speaker Voss has said DEI programs at UW represent overt racism and called them cancerous in a statement following the Regents' vote. He's among many Republicans around the country targeting DEI efforts both on college campuses and in workplaces. We're taking a look now at diversity, equity, and inclusion, its history as a concept, and how it gets put into practice at different institutions. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts actually work and look at organizations? Have you participated in some kind of DEI training or initiative, maybe at your workplace? What did you think of it? Was it helpful and informative? Did it change how you think or act at work? Or do you think it was a waste of time? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Erica Foldy is an associate professor of public and nonprofit management in the Wagner School of Public Service at New York University. She researches what promotes and what gets in the way of collaboration in the workplace, including issues of race and racism in organizations. Erica, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can you talk about the rise of this concept? I guess three concepts that end up being lumped into one: diversity, equity, and inclusion. Tell us a little bit about the history of these ideas.
Sure. So I think most of us are aware that in the 1960s, there were these landmark bills passed, equal employment opportunity. There was also affirmative action was instituted. And both of those were really about trying to avoid discrimination. And those were in place for, you know, a couple of decades. And around the mid-80s, there was a dawning realization that those initiatives were not enough, that organizations had to go beyond simply avoiding discrimination to actively, you know, proactively welcoming and including individuals from very different backgrounds in their organizations, and also towards being more equitable. So, you know, diversity, that the D in DEI, is about representation of different groups. Equity is about justice in organizations or people being treated equally. And I is about inclusion. Do people feel they belong? Are they included in both task networks and social networks? So these programs have now been in place for, you know, coming on 30 years, and they vary a lot across organizations, but there's been a huge wave of these programs that was then strengthened in the wake of the George Floyd murder in 2020.
I wanted to ask about that variation because I think sometimes we talk about DEI as a thing or, you know, as a system or a kind of training. Can you talk about some of the different approaches that we've seen emerge over the years?
Sure. When we think about DEI, we can think about three big buckets of, you know, initiatives or programs. The first bucket is about training, workshops, seminars. I mean, you can call them different things, but, you know, the vast majority of organizations that have DEI programs have some kind of educational opportunities for their employees so they can learn more about stereotypes, implicit bias, multiculturalism, and a variety of other things. So one big bucket is training programs. A second bucket you can think of as structural changes. You can think of them as policy changes. These are formal, written down policies and procedures in the organization that are changed in order to make the workplace more welcoming to people from different backgrounds. So things like HR policies, work-life practices, expanding the number of religious holidays that employees can take advantage of, changing recruitment policies. All those are formal policies, and a lot of organizations make changes in those policies as part of their DEI programs.
Now, a lot of the political backlash is coming, I think, from conservative America these days. But I not that long ago, it seems like more concerns were being raised by people sympathetic to the goals of DEI programs, but saying, yeah, maybe a lot of companies or institutions are implementing programs to say, look, we have a DEI program, just paying lip service than rather than tackling deeper issues. Have you seen that as a concern?
Yeah, I would say that the criticism of these programs comes from both the left and the right. And from the left, people are concerned that there's not enough teeth in these programs. They're not hard hitting enough. And that they're not comprehensive enough, that they tend to focus more on individual change and not on those policy changes that I was talking about. However, it is the criticism on the right that has really gotten much, much more attention for a variety of reasons that we can talk about.
Talking to Erica Foldy from the Wagner School of Public Service at New York University, looking at DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at universities, workplaces, and more. What they are, how they work, what they do, you could join in at 800-642-1234. Erica, let's talk about that now, the more recent conservative criticisms, attacks on DEI policies. One common argument we've heard here in Wisconsin and elsewhere is you're treating people differently based on race. You're actually deepening division rather than bridging division. Can you talk about the concerns you've seen and what you see in DEI programs, whether it matches with that critique?
Right. So whenever I hear someone saying that someone else is being divisive, it makes me suspicious. Generally, the people who say that other people are being divisive, I think that's code for, why do we need to change the status quo? So people for whom the status quo is working, you could argue white men in organizations, people for whom the status quo is largely working, they don't need to speak up. They don't need to raise any issues because everything's working for them. It's the people for whom the status quo is not working, say women, people of color, who are speaking up and saying things aren't working for us. They're the ones that are seen as divisive. The people who are holding on to the status quo are being just as divisive. Both sides are holding on to what they want to see, you know, the policies that they want to see. Speaking up and saying, actually, we think that the workplace could be more welcoming and could be more just and fair, I would argue, is not being divisive, it's being inclusive.
Brianna Caller at 800-642-1234. Kate is with us in Madison. Kate, hi.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call, and thank you so much, Dr. Foley, for being here. I caught the beginning of your segment, and I appreciated kind of the historical context that you had offered at the beginning, but that was kind of situated in like the 1960s and 70s, and I was just curious if you could speak to the way that DEI and issues of critical race theory are really going back to, the time of enslavement in the United States' history and the way that a lot of our systems and structures are kind of inherently racist. And so with that as the context, I think you just kind of said it, there are different ways for different people are coming in at different kind of levels. And so I'm just curious if you could also help frame it from the perspective of a larger historical moment in the U.S.
Okay, thanks for the call, Erica.
Yeah, it's a really great question. So when I talk with my students about this, I say, you know, there have been different approaches to, you know, quote unquote, diversity, equity, and inclusion over the centuries. You know, a couple of centuries ago, our approach was enslavement. It was genocide. Those were the ways that how did we deal with differences, you know, in the workplace? That was how we did it. Now, that you're absolutely right that provides the historical backdrop to, you know, what happened later with Jim Crow laws in the South and other kinds of both, you know, explicit and implicit racism and discrimination across the United States. And of course, that is also the historical backdrop to the landmark civil rights legislation that took place in the 1960s. What I do think is really important is that whenever a group makes progress, you know, through the civil rights movement or other means, whenever a group makes progress, there is almost always a backlash against that progress. There are people for whom that progress is threatening. And I think when things have been run for people like you in your image for decades, or as you're pointing out, hundreds of years, it can be very threatening when other people come and say, you know what, this workplace isn't working for me. I think we need to make some changes. So that history of our racism absolutely flows from hundreds of years, since our country was founded. And it still, in some ways, shows up in our workplaces today. And diversity, equity, and inclusion programs are one way to start overcoming that history.
Thanks for the call, Kate. We're talking about DEI practices, diversity, equity, inclusion, what they actually look like in organizations and on college campuses. Erica Foldy is our guest, associate professor of public and nonprofit management in the Wagner School of Public Service at New York University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest? Do you think a DEI programs at work or school, or maybe your workplace or campus, have been effective or have gone too far? Do you see value in this? Have you been through some kind of a DEI training or program or strategic planning yourself? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, how those concepts are put into practice in workplaces and higher education, goal setting, training, and more. Erica Foldy stays with us, associate professor of public and nonprofit management in the Wagner School of Public Service at New York University. You can join in with your thoughts, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Somebody might be wondering, Erica, they're with an organization, they don't have a DEI program in place, or there's maybe something, but they don't really do much with it. How does an organization start to take this journey?
What I recommend to organizations is that they think in terms of three buckets. So we talked about workshops and trainings. We talked about policies that need to be changed. And then organizations also need to think about culture. Our organizational culture it's intangible. It's actually very difficult to put your finger on. We often take things for granted, the way meetings are run, the way people dress, what kinds of interactions people have in the workplace. All three of those elements, educating individuals, changing policies, and trying to change organizational culture, all those things should work together in creating organizational change. And if you only do one of those things, like a lot of organizations just do trainings, if you only do one of those things, you're not actually going to make much of a dent in how your organization works and its capacity to be diverse, equitable, and inclusive. So my big advice to organizations is that they try to create a more comprehensive program that includes elements of cultural change, policy change, and individual change through educational programs.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Tony is with us in Madison. Tony, hi.
Hi. Yes, it's Tony. I'm a DEI strategist in Madison, and I love this conversation around DEI. My question is around the accountability, transparency process of DEI. I'm very much pro-DEI. I know it's imperfect as a strategy, but I know that fellow consultants and strategists have said it's a wild, wild west out here with a lack of standardization. So can the speaker briefly talk about what is a solution for standardization, even transparency processes around even how negotiations and business, when people enter DEI business, what that could look like in an ethical way.
Tony, thanks for the call. A lot there, Erica, a wild west of consultants, Tony says. What do we do about that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I have personally not heard that. I do some consulting. I have a colleague that I do some consulting with. And what we tell organizations is that recipes don't generally work because organizations are so different. They differ by size. They differ by their particular mission, the services they provide, the products that they create. They're in different parts of the country. They may have very different, the demographics of their workforce may be very different. So we generally encourage organizations to find solutions that work for them. And we don't necessarily encourage standardization. I'd be interested in hearing more from the caller about what the concerns are there. But in general, we think that adapting the approach to the organization is going to be much more successful.
Thanks for the call, Tony. That said, how do we measure success? Even if it's, you know, it will be different from one organization to another. He brought up the issue of accountability. How do we know if a DEI program is setting good goals and accomplishing those goals?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So there are a variety of ways you can do that. Certainly, you can look at the representation of different demographic groups at different levels in the organization. So we want to know that people from marginalized groups are, you know, making it up into the C-suite, into the higher level leadership of the organization. And you can certainly track how those numbers look over time. Another thing that organizations can do is to have a yearly or, you know, maybe bi-yearly climate survey where people are asked, you know, how are you feeling about your workplace? How included do you feel? Do you feel you belong? And you can track the results of those surveys. You can also look at who's applying to your organization, what kinds of people from what kinds of backgrounds are attracted to your organization to apply in the first place. Of course, you want to be very equitable in the recruitment process. But one big question for organizations is, who's applying to us? Are we appealing to the kinds of people that we want to appeal to? So there are multiple ways that you can track progress.
Thanks again for that call, Tony, at 800-642-1234. Erica Foldy is with us from the Wagner School of Public Service at New York University, looking at DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, practices, trainings, and more at workplaces, campuses, and other organizations. Let's go back to your calls now. Carolyn is with us in Oregon. Carolyn, hi.
Yes, hi. I'm from Oregon, Wisconsin, south of Madison. I'm 82 years of age at this point. I had been a social worker for several years. I was a clerical worker with University of Wisconsin for over 20 years. And I have to say that I enjoyed the ethnic diversity on campus. And I did have training to understand the effects of racism on people of color, primarily the black population. And I thought that information was very helpful for me. It's helpful for me to understand and see someone else's perspective. But I'm a social worker, so, you know, my goal always is to relate to the client, or now I relate to anyone. And I also like taking in the big picture to understand where someone is coming from with the way they present themselves or whatever.
Carolyn, and I gotcha. Thanks a lot for sharing that story. Don't have a lot of time left, but Erica, Carolyn, giving some success story there for her DEI training.
Yeah, which is lovely to hear. Training varies. And of course, different kinds of trainings are going to appeal to different kinds of people. But it's certainly possible to develop thoughtful, generous training programs that focus on learning and growth, that are not about, punishing people or making people feel like they're bad people. If they say something inappropriate, it's quite possible to develop training programs that really give people the space and the opportunity to reflect and to think and to grow. And it sounds like the caller had an experience like that.
Thanks again for that call. But Erica, I think you just hit on one of the critiques, concerns, fears of DEI programs for white people in particular. I think it's fair to say that they're going to be attacked. They're going to be portrayed as the bad guy in these programs. How do you tackle that concern?
The best way that facilitators of these programs can tackle that is to make it very clear that not only do we all make mistakes and do we all need to grow, but me, the facilitator, I've made mistakes and I needed to grow. So in my teaching, I often give examples of times when I made an error and I apologized and tried to make amends, and I try to make it I try to normalize the fact that we're all going to make mistakes. And so what we want to do is we want to focus on, you know, telling people that there are other ways to say things or other ways to do things, that we understand that we can change our behavior, and that doesn't mean that we were bad people to begin with.
Time for one more caller. Jerome is with us in Racine. Jerome, hi.
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to make the quick point that there's all these attacks on DEI lately, and it's useful to consider what the opposite of all three of those are, which is having all of one type of person in a place, inequality or exclusion. And it just makes you wonder if the people against DEI would believe in those type of things instead.
Jerome, thanks for the call. Erica, what do you think of Jerome's way of framing that?
You know, I totally love that, and it makes me think of an example. So, you know, you can't see me on the radio, but I'm very short. And so I have a hard time. Sometimes I'm in the grocery store. I have a hard time, you know, reaching that highest shelf. And I have to ask someone for help, and it's embarrassing. So if I go to the store manager and I say, you know, could you please make sure that things are on lower shelves so that I can reach them, you know, is that being divisive? No, that's being inclusive. That's saying that different people have different needs. And being aware of that that's what DEI programs are all about. And that's exactly what the caller is saying.
Erica, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Erica Foldy, Associate Professor of Public and Nonprofit Management in the Wagner School of Public Service at New York University. We talked to her about some of the history of DEI practices, diversity, equity, and inclusion, how they actually look at work and at colleges, and how efforts continue to evolve over the years. Still time for you to share your thoughts via email. You can email ideas@WPR.org with your experiences or questions that we could tackle in a future segment. Again, email ideas@WPR.org.